Next question is to the Victoria University Students Administrative Council representative. And while that person's making their way to the mic, I'm going to ask that people refrain from clapping until the end of each round of questions, because I think that will give us more of an opportunity to hear more from the candidates. So with that, I'll pass it on to the member from Victoria University Students Administrative Council. Please state your name and your question.
Hello, my name's Craig. I'm representing VUSAC. My question is, when elected, sometimes politicians, students feel always just toe the party line as opposed to expressing their own convictions. So are there any issues in your party's platform when, if the vote came in the House of Commons, you would not stand with your party, or if you feel that you would stand with your party all the time, on which issues would your own personal convictions or connections to the community override your platform?
Thank you, Craig. And this one will start with Philip Fernandez.
I think that politicians should vote their conscience, but the way the political process works in Canada right now, you know, MPs have to vote sometimes along party lines, and it's on a partisan basis, and I think that's the problem. I think that if you had a situation where in the ridings, riding associations comprised of citizens actually selected, helped to select and elect candidates, and that process is funded by Elections Canada on a non-partisan basis, then we could try and deal with this problem. Otherwise, we are at loggerheads with each other. You have MPs who are elected by their constituents that go to Ottawa and then have to, you know, vote against the interests of their constituents and so forth. It's a problem.
Thank you, Philip. Bob Ray.
Well, I'm in the embarrassing position of having helped to draft the Liberal Party platform in this election. So if I was to say that I was going to vote against it, I'd look a little strange. But I do think it's a matter of balance. I mean, when people are elected, they're elected in part because of who they are. When you vote, you're voting for an individual. You're also voting for a party. And parties do play a valuable role in our political system, I think, in terms of increasing accountability, in terms of what people stand for and how they vote. But yes, the answer is I have on occasion voted against, in favor of issues that I felt very strongly about as a matter of conscience, tried to persuade people that I was right. I've also been in a position some occasions to allow for free votes and to allow for people to express their conscience, which I think is important. But I don't think you'll find it difficult to find out what I think about issues and how I intend to vote on issues. It's usually pretty clear, and I've appreciated that chance on a number of occasions representing this constituency as well as others in the past. Thank you very much for your question.
Thank you, Bob. Ellen?
It's difficult for me to think of an issue that would trouble me with the Green Party platform. There are some things about the platform that really, really excite me. I will mention a couple in a minute. But one thing that really impresses me and reassures me is how democratic the Green Party is. Members are listened to, members have a voice. We can adjust our platform according to what party members believe. So I'm very reassured about that. Should anything come up that troubles me, I know my concerns will be addressed. At the moment, two things that come to mind. One is a message I just got before I came about copyright legislation. And my position is exactly in line with the Green Party's position to be responsible about copyright legislation and not to support the current recommendations of the government. So that I'm a member of the Professional Writers Association of Canada. I have been for 20 years. I don't think I have time for my second example. I hope I'll come to it
later. Thank you, Ellen. Gerald?
Well, being an independent, I am my own party. I just love every single one of you, 6.4 billion people to join me. That's all.
Johan?
Well, we support the right of recall, and that's been a part of our plank for democratic reform. And we also think that MPs, by the way, shouldn't earn more than the average industrial wage. The real problem, the disconnect, is the fact that if big business, if we want to influence Mr. Ray, who's a shoe-in in this particular riding, if we want to influence Mr. Ray, we demonstrate. We write him a letter. We organize a protest. Maybe we'll have to do a sit-in or two in his office. But if Bay Street wants to influence Mr. Ray, they take him out for lunch. So that's the problem with and that's why we need a system of proportional representation to make every vote count. Thank you.
Peter O'Hara. Next, Susan Wallace.
When each of us has to take the decision about which party we're going to affiliate with, we look for the one that most nearly reflects our own personal values, and we choose accordingly. And when we choose a political party, I can guarantee you that it's almost impossible to find one that matches square on your position on absolutely everything. So having said that, the New Democratic Party takes a very democratic approach to the formulation of its policy through a convention process open to all members who can participate and fight it out right tooth and nail until we get it to an agreement. Once we've made that agreement, we all get behind it. But there, I can think of three instances in which I would have to disagree with my party should it change its position. Should our party reverse its position on choice, I would have to tear up my card. If it did so with respect to capital punishment, I would have to tear up my card. And if my leader ever called artists a bunch of whiners, I would tear up my card.
Ms. White.
Thank you very much. My hero is Tommy Douglas, not because of what he did on health care, but because of his stand on the War Measures Act. Tommy Douglas took a position against his party because of his conscience, and he really paid a heavy political price for it. And I think it's really important on issues like that that we think about what our conscience tells us, and we have to vote that way. If I were faced with a vote in Afghanistan, I would vote against the war, period, full stop, and I would, but I think the important thing is that as a politician, you have to let people know what you're thinking. You have to be open to discussions with your constituents about what your position is, and you have to be transparent about what final decision you made, and then your constituents can judge you accordingly. Thank you.
Finally, we have David Gentile.
Okay, just to answer that, it's a little bit of a difficult thing for me to comment on the platform for obvious reasons. I will say, though, that I am a... I will say, though, that what has been said is true. When we are candidates, we search for a party that best represents us. But in the end, I believe all of us on this stage are strong believers in democracy. And of course, if there was a fundamental issue where my constituents completely disagreed with the government, I would personally believe that I would have to side with the constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you to all of you. The next question comes from the ABC Residents Association representative, please.
Thank you, Dean Hunter. The board of ABC wants me to ask you to drill a little deeper into the financing of the big cities of Canada. They asked me to do that before the crash, but I think it's still relevant. We're going to get out of this one day. We're in a situation now where the big cities of Canada provide 90% of the population growth of this country, where a third of the immigrants are coming to the GTA alone, where the GTA in turn generates 10% of the national total wealth. There's terrific growth in the big cities. The traditional revenue sources are hopelessly inadequate to fund this growth. This has been dramatically revealed by the production of the Metrolinx proposal for a 25-year plan of public transit in the GTA, costing $50 billion. That's so much beyond what property taxes can afford as to be unthinkable. So, the question is, what is your city's agenda? Will you, as Mayor Miller would like you to do, turn over 1 cent on the GST that is raised in the Toronto area back to the cities? That would provide $450 million for the city of Toronto and another $400 million for the
Thank you, Bill. We'll start with Bob Ray.
I think there's a major fiscal imbalance, if you will, between the cities and both levels of government, both the province and the federal government. And I think it has to be resolved. I don't think it's going to be easy to do, but there's something wrong when the planning, if we take the transit exercise as an example, there's something wrong when the planning exercise takes place in any absence of what the fiscal capacity of the jurisdiction is, for two reasons. One is there obviously isn't the money to do the planning, but the other thing is the planning takes place in the absence of money. There's always more good ideas than there is money, and it's important to start out knowing how much do we have to spend in order to create a transit system, rather than what's the nicest transit system we could ever think of? Oh, and later on, where are we going to get the money? It reverses the order. So we really do need to see a complete realignment of taxing between the three levels of government. It's not a little tiny fix, it's a big fix that's required. And I think it's going to take a lot of concentrated effort and cooperation between the three levels of government in an unprecedented way in order for us to be able to achieve that change.
Thank you, Bob. Ellen Michelson?
I've already explained that the Green Party will put the GST back up to 6%, and the additional 1% will come here. And I'm glad the other parties are having the opportunity to address that. Another plank in our platform is municipal super funds for community housing, including energy efficient co-ops and affordable housing and rehabilitating housing. Public transit support from these funds, including and car sharing, cycle and walker friendly environment, and tax deductible transit passes. We will cut payroll taxes. Ontario is Canada's manufacturing center, and we're now a have-not province. A lot of this is funded by our carbon tax, and research has proved, research funded by the government that called this election, has proved that our carbon tax will work and make these things possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Gerald DeRome?
Well, if you limit wealth on the individual, business and multi-corporations, then it's not a question of money, because wealth is created by the wear and tear, the work of the people, the sweat, as well as the resources that we could extract and our ingenuity. My motto is, life is not a business, but our business should be life itself. We give people lots of monetary wealth to buy material things. Individuals are allowed to accumulate. Well, if that money wasn't allowed to be accumulated in the first place, it'd be more for every person and for the services that are needed. So it's, what can I say? It's not a business, and I don't think federal politics should be run as a business as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Johan Boyden?
We need to immediately grapple with a tremendous download on cities and upload 100% of that download of that's making cities pay for social programs. And cities need wealth taxing powers. They shouldn't be relying on the income of homeowners. We need to give cities constitutional status. We support returning 50% of gas and road taxes to cities. And I agree that this will cost a lot of money. Where can we get the funds to massively expand our public transit system from nationalizing our energy industry? It's a billion-dollar price tag for Vancouver and their extension of their LRT. So we've got to be talking in those scale of figures, not in millions. And where is that money going to come from? It can come from taking over our oil and gas industries that are making tremendous profits. So that's a comprehensive approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Johan. Susan Wallace.
Thank you. The New Democratic Party has already announced its transit platform and has acknowledged that it must pour the $400 million into the City of Toronto's transit system funded by the 1 cent tax, but on the federal gas tax is how we would source that. Additionally, we would look to redress our unemployment insurance system, which chronically and consistently treats Ontarians completely differently in their entitlement, depriving EI recipients of over $4,000 in benefits that are received by other regions of the country. We propose making a Southern Ontario Economic Development Region that would include the Greater Toronto Area and much of our manufacturing sector in the same way that we treat the regions of the Atlantic, the North, and the West. In terms of transit as well, we also want to tie that with urban densification plans that are sustainable and fully consultative. We do need to bring people closer to our mass transit stations, but we also need to do it in a way that protects our rights as urban dwellers and makes sure that we're not displacing people and services that are otherwise necessary.
Thank you, Susan. Liz White?
Yeah, I think we need to amend our political structures so that we give cities greater governing rights, very much like the United States, very much like Johan is talking about. We need to stop the top-down imposition and have create structures so that communities have their say, so that there's local taxation, progressive taxation, not property tax, and that means that the people who pay the tax actually begin to have the say about what happens in their community. I think a really good example of that is the Toronto Port Authority, which has really defined the waterfront, determined what the islands are going to look like, forced an airport down our throat. That's a federal government funding, and local people really have very little to say about what actually goes on there. And finally, I think we need to use some federal dollars to actually bring some positive environmental solutions to some of the really big issues that are facing our cities, like polluted air, that are causing people to die prematurely.
Thank you, Liz. Next, David Gentile.
Okay, I strongly believe that our cities are in need of help, and I think the federal government can't just direct certain amounts of money one-off to our cities. They need to continue to do things like what we've done, transfer a portion of the gas tax to the city so that they can deal with local infrastructure concerns. We also need to help with infrastructure such as the Conservative government's long-term action plan to reduce gridlock and grow the GTA's economy. But there is a larger issue at work here. It's not just the solution to this problem. The long-term solution is not just going to be with the federal government. There needs to be much more interaction with the provinces and municipalities on this to find a more long-term solution. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Final word to Philip Fernandez.
Clearly, the way the arrangements are right now, cities like Toronto suffer. And I don't think the solution is necessarily going to be creating Bantustans around all these cities. I think that if it's the issue of resources, if you look at what's being doled out to the moneylenders and the banks in terms of interest payments, the handouts to multinationals to invest overseas, if we had a chance to actually control that revenue, we can maybe look at investing in cities. The other thing I think is a constitutional question. Because the way it's set up in this country right now, you have three levels of government, federal government, provincial government, and municipal, and they have loggerheads with each other. Depending on the province, the strength of the province, they can lobby more or less with the federal government. It just creates a lot of tension. There's no planning, there's no discussion about how every human being in Canada can live with dignity, which I think is the starting point.
Thank you. Thank you to all candidates for your
with the issues at all. I have to admit, nothing wrong with that. I have my own issues and strengths, and I am not aware, and I cannot answer that to your liking. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Johan Boyd.
Well, absolutely. And we need to tremendously expand the funding that goes to people with disabilities, which adversely impacts women, people of color communities, Aboriginal communities. Our party calls for strengthening and enforcing affirmative action in hiring and employment equity. We also are against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity too. We think that people with disabilities should have equal access to social, medical, and educational facilities and services, and to strengthen laws also against hate crimes. So in this day and age, we are seeing a tremendous attack on people, and especially the people who are most disadvantaged. The first step comes with stopping the Harper Tories. Thank you.
Thank you, Johan. Susan Wallace.
Thank you. As to the first part of the question, absolutely, a New Democratic Party would immediately restore the Court Challenges program, and it just goes without saying that we think it was catastrophic to even think of slashing it in the first place. What good are having rights in our country if you can't actually enforce them? And we can only do so in many groups through the Court Challenges program. The New Democratic Party has a fully articulated vision of issues around disability issues. First of all, creating a Canadian Disabilities Action Plan based on the vision of inclusiveness and accessible life in Canada. I'm not going to have time in the 10 seconds remaining here to tell you all the other elements included in our policy, but we would definitely immediately implement the UN Covenant on Rights of Peoples with Disabilities, which Canada has already signed and is just languishing there, and establish nationwide goals that would ensure that every Canadian in need of non-acute care would receive appropriate levels of care and home care. We have a fully fledged home care program that I would urge you to look at as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Liz White.
In terms of the Court Challenges program, I think the cutting of that program speaks to the fact of Stephen Harper not wanting to have anybody criticizing him, and I think it should be reinstated immediately. With regard to the National Action Plan, I have not read it in its entirety, but I think the intent of it and its direction is a really good thing, and I think we should do it. As somebody whose mother was in a wheelchair and attempted to transport her in the subway, trying to find elevators that worked to get to the direction that we wanted to go was virtually impossible at times. And so I think it speaks to the real problems that people who have trouble getting around face just doing the day-to-day ordinary things. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. David Gentile.
Thank you very much for the question. I have to tell you, I have a member of my family who has a severe disability, so I'll work with you. I have to admit, I have not read the action plan, but I'll work with any organization representing disabled peoples to improve access, political or otherwise. As for the Court Challenges program, this is a program that our government did cut. We did feel that it was not effective, and my stance is that that was a good decision.
Thank you, David. Philip Fernandez.
I think this is a question of rights. And I think what is tragic in our society is that the most vulnerable people are denied their rights more and more every day. I think a Marxist-Leninist government, the first thing we would do is we would guarantee those rights and invest in social programs so that no section of the people, whether they are people with disabilities, national minorities without work, any people should not be discriminated on the basis of their lifestyle, their abilities, what have you. And I think the Charter of Rights and Freedoms should guarantee those rights, and it should be the responsibility of the government to make sure that nobody is left behind, nobody's left to fend for themselves.
Thank you, Philip. Bob Ray.
My friend, Mr. Gentile, is completely wrong about the Court Challenges program. It played a very valuable role in our national life. We wouldn't have a French language hospital in Eastern Ontario if it wasn't for a program such as that one. We wouldn't have equal rights for many people, including people with disabilities and other groups in the country, if we hadn't had the Court Challenges program. It's been canceled twice by Conservatives and has been reinstated by Liberals. It will be reinstated again because we believe it's a very important part of our national fabric. Second point is I'm in favor of a National Disabilities Act. I think the action plan is a good one, and I do think we need a national legislative framework as well as legislation at the provincial level to ensure that we are facing up to a challenge of the present and what, as Gary has said, will increasingly be a challenge of the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Final word to Ellen Michelson.
Yes and yes. I support both, and I support the spirit behind both. It's about respect and about enhancing life.
We are in support of an immediate action on post-secondary education and the national rights of the people of Quebec should be respected in such legislation, and the right for Aboriginal-run and determined education should also be respected in such legislation because Canada is a country of many nations. We support eliminating tuition fees completely, beginning with their reduction and rollback, which is something that is mentioned in the UN Charter of Human Rights, and that many countries, not just socialist Cuba, but even capitalist countries such as in Scandinavia, have achieved, and other parties that are on the left used to call for too. And we also call for eliminating all student debt. And I support the call for earmarking funds for public education, like we call for the public delivery of our health system. And in closing, to stop military research on our campuses, too, and put that towards research for peace.
Thank you, Johan. Susan Wallace.
Thank you. The New Democratic Party has a fully articulated plan with respect to student debt in particular, capping student debt and debt relief. And I'm just going to jump ahead also and try to second guess my colleague with the Tories on what he's going to tell you, because I heard him tell the same story last week, which was he went to university, it was his choice, he'll take the debt. Well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's just not going to cut it. We need an educated workforce. We need an educated population that can actually take decisions on our behalf as our leaders. And saying that we are going to leave it to the rich to be able to send their kids to school is something that will never fly with the New Democrats. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Liz White.
Actually, our political party focuses on the environment and animal protection, so we don't actually have a position on this. But my personal position, if I were to be elected, I think we should include post-secondary education as part of the education system. It should be publicly funded.
Thank you, Liz. David Gentile.
Okay, well, that wasn't my entire answer last week, but I will say that out of all the candidates here on the stage, at least this was the case last week, I was the only one who had actually been on a university campus as a student within the last 24 months. And I can tell you that I did accumulate quite a bit of student debt during my graduate degree. You know, there is a principle of choice here, so I disagree with the Communist Party decision, interestingly enough, that university should be completely free. But I do think that the federal government and the provinces have to be real partners on this with students. I will support an act such as the one you talk about, depending on what's in the act. But if you're talking about having dedicated funding from the federal government that people see as reliable, absolutely, I would support that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Philip Fernandez.
I as well think that all education should be provided free by the state. According to the Homes Not Bombs campaign, $18 billion is spent every year in the war in Afghanistan. And if we weren't, if we didn't fight that war, we'd have $18 billion to invest in education to ensure that every student, especially those in post-secondary, have free education. So why can't we do that?
Thank you, Philip. Bob Ray?
In answer to your question, I would favor both the post-secondary act as well as dedicated funding. We've called for a dramatic change in the student loan program and support for students across the country in our platform to increase the amount of grants for students across the board to make sure that all students, regardless of parental income, have access to loans. And finally, to lower the interest rate on loans immediately so that it reflects the actual cost of government borrowing, which would be about cutting the interest rate in about half as it relates to that, and extend the time after graduation from 6 months to 2 years before you have to start to repay, and to allow for a longer time to repay. I do think we have to establish as the first principle in the Post-Secondary Education Act would be the principle that no student will be denied access to post-secondary education because of their financial circumstances. Everyone should be able to go regardless of how much money they have.
Thank you, Bob. Ellen Michelson.
Starving student used to be said with a smile. It isn't funny anymore. The Green Party will forgive 50% of students' debt for every post-secondary student who completes the program. My answer to the specific questions is yes, and yes, we will work with everyone involved to cap and hopefully reduce tuition fees. There are numerous other student-related policies. You can read our entire platform on our website. The Green Party believes that education is not an individual cost. It is an investment in the future of all of us.
Thank you, Ellen. Final word to Gerald Durome.
That was well said. It's an investment in everybody. You have to understand that I look at things through an evolutionary perspective, and a lot of my answers seem to be out of place. But I really believe everybody should go back to school because everybody has something to teach and learn from everyone. It's not a matter of cost either. It's a matter of building communities from all aspects of where we come from. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Thank you to all the candidates for your answers. I'll go to the